Everyone's back, fed, good stuff. My name is Simon Clark. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. Yep. Thanks for lunch. It was wonderful. Thank you. And it's good to be back here this afternoon. There's a lot of levity in what we're going to be talking about and what we've been talking about here, and there's a lot of laughter involved in this, but beneath all of that, there is some passion that I find very difficult to hide. You know, and I've got to tell you that lunch was a great experience, but I will share this with you, is that I had the opportunity to meet a woman in this fellowship who's been sitting through this conference with the mental obsession upon her, trying to listen to what we've been saying, but with a desire to drink. Dying under our own noses of untreated alcoholism within these rooms today. You know? And I get pretty passionate about this kind of stuff because I kind of feel a responsibility to tell the newcomer the truth. Hanging around on step one for 2 or 3 weeks is an absolute death sentence to a real alcoholic. Yeah. Get pretty passionate about that. Managed to get connected with another woman in these rooms who's available to help her walk her through this and get some power. Because the bottom line is that if the mental obsession remains on her through the rest of the day, she may well drink. And for her to drink is to die. I feel a responsibility as part of this fellowship to tell her the truth. Chapter 6, Into Action. Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual program of action. It's not therapy, nor is it a self-help group. Chapter 6 says, Into Action. It says, having made our personal inventory, what should we do about it? We're assuming that the reader or the prospect has now finished the inventory. We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. Well, how have we been trying to do that? We've been working steps 1 through 4. We have admitted certain defects, the book's given us 4. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We've put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the 5th step in the program of recovery, mentioned in the preceding chapter. I'm not going to go into too much around that, but further on down in the book there, it says, in actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. And it says here, the best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. What are easier methods? Taking your time to work the steps, doing a step a year, 90 meetings, 90 days, just don't drink, go to meetings, call me before you drink. I'm a real alcoholic. The last person I'm going to call before I drink is my sponsor. I'm going to drink and then call him afterwards. I had to ask myself, what are easier methods? Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. It goes on to say down here, and this page makes a lot of reference to dishonesty, page 73. It says, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He's very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. My actors come from dishonesty and fear. The inconsistency is made worse by some of the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he's revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He's under constant fear and tension. Dash, that makes for more drinking. So the dishonesty and the things that I get involved in on my sprees, and I'll say this, drunk or sober, Because I can spree being dry in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, in lots of different areas. And I become so ashamed about the things I do on my dry sprees, suffering from untreated alcoholism, I don't want people to know. Now that behaviour generates fear and tension. And then that makes for more drinking. Goes on to talk about, you know, we have seldom told the whole truth. That's dishonest. Nor have we followed their advice. Unwilling to be honest, more dishonesty. With these sympathetic men, we were honest with no one else, more dishonesty. Further down the page, it says, we must be entirely honest with somebody if we suspect to live long or happily in this world. And then what the book does is it gives us sort of five or six or six or seven different people that we can share our inventory with. And it's asking us to consider who we share our inventory with. You know, the book says it may be someone ordained by an established religion, closed-mouthed understanding friend, a doctor maybe, a psychologist maybe even one of our own family. But we don't do that if we're going to harm them or make them unhappy. Right. Gives us lots of different conceptions. I did mine with Peter. And I continue to do my inventories. The more I work and I rework the 12 steps, I continue to share my step 5 with Peter. He understands and approves what I'm driving at. He's not going to change my plan. He needs to know my defects of character. It says we can postpone step 5 only, however, if we hold ourselves in complete readiness to go through with it at the first opportunity. That's the only reason why we postpone or delay. We're very anxious that we talk to the right person. It's important that he keep the confidence that he fully understand and approve what we're driving at, that he will not try to change our plan. You see, if I followed the instructions carefully up until now, I've a completed inventory of resentment, fear and sex. I've understood in the fourth column of the resentment list my defects of character. Now, the reason why it's important that I choose the right person, and in this case it is Peter, who's my sponsor, is that he fully understand and approve what I'm driving at and that won't try to change my plan. And my point is, and I've seen this in Alcoholics Anonymous, people going to the wrong person who have no experience of steps 4 and 5, reading them in their inventory, and the other person sitting opposite them saying, well, you're quite right. Well, no wonder you drank. Well, I'd do that if they did that. Oh, it wasn't all of you. And basically justified what was going on in columns 3 and 4 by the actions of the persons in 1 and 2. That's why that's written there. And that's what I've seen as I've experienced that with other people. It says, when we decide to hear our story, we waste no time. Why does that translate into take your time to work the steps? Work a step a year. We waste no time. We have a written inventory and prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we're about to do and why we have to do it. Inventory isn't optional for me. You know, inventory continues to remove from me manifestations of self that block me on a daily basis from this power. I have to do it. I'm powerless. Understood the nature of alcoholism. I'm dying of untreated alcoholism. I need power. In order to access power, I need to empty out of the resentments and I have the fear I have, look at my behaviour towards the opposite sex, share it with God and another human being. Then I begin to access power. It says he should realise that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. This programme of Alcoholics Anonymous is not for everybody with a minor problem with drugs and alcohol. This fellowship and this program was created for people that were dying of a disease that nothing else would work for. Unless I don't get spiritually connected, I will die. Dry or drunk, this illness will kill me. And I'm coming from experience, suffering from alcoholism and running around Alcoholics Anonymous untreated for 5 years. The illness will kill me drunk or sober. Fifth step promises, for me, you know, this whole business is aimed at having a spiritual experience, which is a psychic change and an emotional rearrangement within ourselves. It says, once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, and here they come, we're delighted. We can look the world in the eye. Now that was good for me because I wasn't really able to look you man to man or man to woman in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Never. Never was I be alone at perfect peace and ease, ever. I was either drinking, using, or when I wasn't drinking and using, you know, I was so uncomfortable in my own skin. I used to pace up and down my apartment like a caged tiger. Voices driving me mad, could never sit still, couldn't watch a film all the way through, wasn't able to sit quietly for 5 minutes. Voices were driving me mad, terrified about what had happened 3 weeks ago, absolutely consumed with fear about what was going to happen tomorrow. Couldn't be alone at perfect peace and ease. The great promise of the fifth step here is that once we've done this step withholding nothing, we can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. Well, that's great news, because further back prior to doing the third step prayer, selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of the trouble, driven by 100 forms of fear and self-delusion. Fifth step promise says that our fears will fall from us. No need to be afraid anymore. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. Now we start to access power. Now we start to access power. We may have had many certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. Further back in the chapter of We Agnostics on page 44, it says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. Okay, we've been qualified, we understand that. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. I've not even completed the 12 steps yet. I've just finished step 5, and the book's saying to me that I'm going to begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared, or the drug problem has disappeared, will often come quite strongly. And I experienced that. The first time I went through this, as it's laid out in the big book under the guidance of Peter, I shared my inventory with him about 2 or 3 days later. I woke up and there was a profound silence between my ears. For the first time in my life, all of those voices that had been driving me insane for my whole life had gone. Like the silence there is in here right now. That was how quiet my head was for the first time in my adult life. And I knew something was different. I knew something had changed. All of these beliefs I had, that I'm willing to believe in a power greater than myself, this happened to me after step 5. And now I begin to know that this power's out there. That there is something out there, because it has done for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I've only just finished the fifth step. I hadn't woken up with a ball of fear inside of me. I wasn't worrying about money. I wasn't worrying about whether she's gonna stay or is she going to go. Or am I going to get paid my commission check, you know, next week or not? Or is he going to hold that back? Or am I not going to have a job? Because that's the stuff that used to consume me. And I woke up that morning and I knew something was different. My feet were on different ground for the first time in my adult life. And I got straight on the phone and I said, Pete, something's happening. This has happened. And he said, go to page 75, you're beginning to have a spiritual experience. And when I knew what had been promised to me based on the actions, and the book was telling me I'm going to get these results, I took the actions and I started getting the results exactly as they're outlined in that book. And I knew for the first time, now I knew that this worked. This wasn't just a, you know, a pink cloud day, as I hear a lot of the time, or, you know, one of these things. This was real, and it was a profound experience. I'm fortunate enough, I get to listen to a lot of fourth steps. I work with a bunch of people, and I get to listen to fourth steps in the form of a fifth step on a weekly basis at the moment. I have to be rigorously honest when I go through this process and do this with my sponsor. My job as a sponsor, when I'm listening to a fifth step, I have a piece of paper and a pen, and I make the eighth step list for the prospect as I'm listening to their fifth step. What I'm also doing is listening out for column 4 to ensure that they've been accurate on the defects of character that they've presented. And my job there is to share some experience on certain things that they've done, and also to watch out for those defects of character. And I listen very, very carefully. And if I hear any other defects of character coming up, I'll make a note of them and remind them and speak with them about that. But also I'm looking at the 8-step list and I'm making their 8-step list as they're going through. Because when they've finished this, as we'll go on, Peter will go on, I'm sure, in a moment, 6 and 7, we can see the truth about ourselves. I could see the truth about myself after that 5th step. Step 6 and 7, am I willing to let this go? Abso-bloody-lutely. This is the stuff that's been keeping me sick. This is the stuff that I'm dying from. It's not their fault anymore. I'm running on selfishness, self-seeking, and I'm dishonest and afraid. I need to be rid of that because this is the root of my trouble. When I saw that that was the stuff I was being willing to let go of and it was killing me, I was willing to let that go. Well, I'm not quite sure I'm going to, you know, let go of all of these. Fine. Stay sick. Life and death errand. Life and death errand. Okay, I'm done. Peter, over to you.
Thanks, Simon. Peter, alcoholic.
Hi, Peter.
Still recovered by the grace of God and this year book. Interesting that this chapter, where the 5th step is called Into Action. I thought I'd taken some action in the 4th step, but I hadn't done some reflection in the 4th step. Now I take that someplace else. 1, 2, 3, and 4 are me. I can do it with me. Now I take that, I take it someplace else. This is where I begin the action. It's also into action because now the acceleration is on us. Now it's starting to move. One of the things that this talks about a sponsor in here, and one of the things that I was told very, very early on in Alcoholics Anonymous was how to choose a sponsor. And there's certain questions that I have to ask a person that I ask to be my sponsor. Number one is, do you have a sponsor? I want my sponsor to have a sponsor. Next one is what step you on? Now that sounds very precocious for a newcomer to go up to an old timer and ask. In our group, we say at the beginning of the meeting who is available. We stand up at the beginning of our meeting to say if we're available. If we've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we're available to have the time to spend with newcomers. And we stand up at the beginning of the meeting so people can identify who is willing to be a sponsor. This program also tells me that if I don't give this away, I won't keep it. If anybody asks me to sponsor them, I have never refused. If anybody ever refuses you when you ask them, will you be my sponsor, and they say, no, I don't have the time, you don't want what they got. Cool. Go find someone else. Go find someone else. Why would I refuse? Why would I refuse someone the gift of a life? Why would I do that? This was given freely to me by a Glaswegian truck driver in 1981. I honestly don't know where he parked his truck, to be honest, because where I lived there was no way he could do it, but I don't know. But he came to see me a lot. We did a lot of work on this stuff. He took time out and he took trouble and he took time and effort and made sacrifice to pass this on to me. Now, okay, we can turn around and say, when I do this, I get to keep it. Maybe there's a motivation there, but why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I? And what it says in here, it says that we seek out an acquaintance of a closed-mouthed, understanding friend. That's qualification for a sponsor. A closed-mouthed, understanding friend. It also says that this person is got to be able to keep a confidence. I always say to people when they're going to share a 5th step with me, this is between you, me, and God. I never share what I've heard with anyone, ever. I may go to my, if I hear something really disturbing, I may go to my sponsor and say, I've heard something really disturbing in the 5th step, and it is disturbing me. And he's going to say, okay, what's it about you that's disturbing you? It's not the other person, it's me now. That's why I need a sponsor. And I know my sponsor's got a sponsor, and my sponsor's got a sponsor. And my sponsor's sponsor probably has a sponsor, though I think he might be dead now. But if you followed it back, you'd get back to Dr. Bob, I can guarantee it. And not very far. It says that is a rule. There's a rule. There's no rules in Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's one on page 74. There's a rule. Is, what's the rule? We must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others. So I don't go around and dump on people. Sometimes I go to meetings and I want to actually wash the table afterwards. There's been so much dumping in that room. And they go away feeling great and I go away feeling horrible. I wonder why that is. How selfish of you doing that in a meeting. It's not what they're for. Meetings are not for that. Do you know what they're for? This is what they're for. This is my favourite page. I've even cut it out and stuck it in the back of my book. As Bill sees it, page 79, unless you've got Bill sees it, and he says this, an AA group, as such, cannot take on all the personal problems of its members, let alone non-alcoholics and the world around us. The AA group is not, for example, a mediator of domestic relations, nor does it furnish personal financial aid to anyone. How many meetings have we sat through where we've heard nothing but personal relations? Though members may sometimes be helped in such matters by their friends in AA, after the meeting, before the meeting, it's not that we're not interested in your problems, but let's have them in the right place. Come early, stay late, go for coffee. Let's go for a meal afterwards. Let's see how we can help. The primary responsibility for the solutions of all his problems of living and growing rests squarely on the individual himself. We take responsibility in here. I'm no longer in my disease. I am now beginning to recover or recovered. I am responsible for my actions now. Should an AA group attempt this sort of help, its effectiveness and energies would be hopelessly dissipated. This is why sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of AA's 12 steps, is the sole purpose of the group. Sole purpose of the group. If we don't stick to this cardinal principle, we shall almost certainly collapse, and if we collapse, we cannot help anyone. In certain parts of the world, AA's success rate is through the floor. Around about 2% in certain places, and there is some anecdotal evidence that alcoholics recover spontaneously at about the rate of 2%. Which means in certain places, Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work anymore. Yet in the early days, and if you read if you read the preface to the second edition, we had 50% success rate with people who came straight away, and some people who slipped afterwards another 25%. That's 75% rate, success rate. We've forgotten how to do this. We really have. I've seen it and I've watched it happen. We've forgotten how to do this. We've become self-help groups. We've become bad therapy. Therapy full of sick people. Sick people trying to keep people sick. We're trying to get people well. We just stay sick. I need to work these steps to get power in my life in order that I recover from my condition. If I don't recover from my condition, I will drink again. That's it. We're talking about life. We're on a life and death errand here. Alcoholics Anonymous deals with life and death. I get very passionate about this because I've nearly died in Alcoholics Anonymous sober because I forgot to do this. Well, I got too busy to do this. My ego regrew. And I started to get very, very important and I didn't need to do any of this stuff anymore. And when I say I'm recovered, but I'm not cured. When I say I'm recovered, people hear cured. No, I'm not cured. I will die with this disease. I will die with this disease. But I don't want to die of it. And because I know what the answer is, and because Alcoholics Anonymous ought to know what the answer is, it says on the front of this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and we took our name of the fellowship from the book in Cleveland, Ohio, with a guy called Clarence, dropped out of the Oxford groups and said, they don't want all that stuff. We're going to do it our own. We're going to do what's in here. What are we going to call ourselves? Well, let's call ourselves after the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why we're called Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why the fellowship is called Alcoholics Anonymous. And we've forgotten what to do in here. And people are dying. I'm serious. People are dying. I've watched people die, drunk and sober, over the last 20 years or so. And what I get upset about is the fact that we've got the answer here. And we get stick about talking about it in our meetings. There's some places where you can't go in the meeting with the big book. They stop you at the door. Don't bring that in here. Just because there's a circle and triangle outside the door doesn't mean God's inside. There's two kinds of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not me, it's a quote from someone else. There's two kinds, and someone I greatly respect in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never met him, but I'd love to. And he says there's two kinds of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's the people who do the work and the people who bitch and moan about the people who do the work. Who are you hanging out with? I'm hanging out with the people who do the work. Because I need to, because otherwise I'm going to die. You know. We do this stuff. I say to folks when they come to see me with the fifth step, tell me the worst thing first. Tell me the thing you're going to go to the grave with. Tell me the thing you're not going to tell me right now, because after that it's downhill. After that it's downhill. Yeah. And I tried to hold on to some stuff. But I got called out. And it says down here, this sort of prosaic thing about we're building this arch. And have we tried to sneak anything through? You know, because it's going to come up and trip me up in the end. But this great thing here is that, you know, having done this, it says that we're on a broad highway. Now, it says earlier on, you know, that God doesn't make hard terms for those who seek him. Another great in Alcoholics Anonymous, Ray O'Keefe, used to say, is this hard terms? This isn't hard terms. This isn't hard terms. Compared to where I come from, this is easy. This is easy stuff compared to where I'm from. You know? God doesn't make hard terms. I take one step towards God. God takes two steps towards me. It says here we're on a broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. On this broad highway. If you know something about this stuff, I'm gonna start doing it. I haven't done it up till now, but I'm gonna tell newcomers when they or prospects or proteges, sponsees when they come to see me. The book calls them proteges. When they come to see me, don't bring your big book. Put it up on a shelf at home. Why? Well, you'll see. Because it says here they're returning home. Now, think about this. Think about where we are. Look, the first three steps, I can do step one drunk. Okay? I can do step two the moment I get in the room or make a phone call. Somebody come and watch a 12-step call. I can make the step two then. Now, I need a power. You're powerless. I need a power. Step three I can do very, very quickly also. Maybe within a couple of days. The big book talks about the second visit. If somebody walks in the room, why would somebody keep them on step one? Piss poor sponsorship. Why? If someone in the room, they ought to have, they're already close to doing step three. Why else come to Alcoholics Anonymous? We're the last house on the block. Nobody wants to hang out with us. You're in the room. You're seeking a power already. Step three. Let's get them into step three. In the old days, they used to take you upstairs and kneel you down. Get you surrendering before you even went into the meeting. Get them into step three. Step four, kid, straight away. We need to clear away the crap that's in our way because we need to access power. So maybe within two or three days of coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll do an inventory. How long does inventory take? Well, it takes as long as it takes. I personally ask people to try and do it as fast as possible, even if it's partial and we've got to get through some stuff. If you're going to drink, let's look at the first, 10 things, 10 people, institution or whatever that you've got resentment against. Let you get clear of those, access some power, and then go back and work some more inventory. Within maybe 2 or 3 weeks, we're into a step 5 situation. Maybe even quicker. I've heard it is done in hours. There's a really good thing in here. Here's a deal. On page 291, I hope it's still there in the fourth edition. It might be in a different page in the fourth edition. I've no idea. I'm on the third edition here. But this guy's talking about staying with Dr. Bob. And he says, the day before I was due back to go back to Chicago, a Wednesday, and Dr. Bob's afternoon off. He had me down in his office, and we spent 3 or 4 hours formally going through the 6-step program as it was at that time. Okay, 6 steps. But what they've done with the 6 steps is they expanded them into 12. It's the same steps. But they've just made them into 12 steps instead of 6. They've split a couple up. The 6 steps were complete deflation, 1 and 2, dependence and guidance on higher power, 2 and 3, moral inventory, 5, confession, 4, 5, restitution, 8 and 9, continued work with other alcoholics, 12. 10 and 11 wasn't in there.
Peter, it's page 260.
262 in the fourth edition. 262 in the fourth edition. Dr. Bob led me through all the steps at the moral inventory. He brought up some of my bad personality traits or character defects, such as selfishness, conceit, jealousy, carelessness, intolerance, ill temper, sarcasm, and resentment. I'm sure he was pleased to hear about that. We went over these in great length in 2 or 3 hours. And he finally asked me if I wanted these defects of character removed. I said yes. We both knelt at his desk and prayed, each of us asking to have these defects taken away. Then he went home. Hours. Hours. And sometimes newcomers come to Alcoholics Anonymous, they stay in step 1 for a year. Why? Huh?
Can I just finish that off?
Yeah, sure.
If that's all right. It says, this picture is still vivid. If I live to be 100, it will always stand out in my mind. Now, here it is. It was very impressive, and I wish that every AA could have the benefit of this type of sponsorship today. These steps were designed in order to be worked rapidly so that the obsession to drink would be removed from the newcomer and that he could access a power that this book calls God and that I choose to call God. Now, I just want to tie up a couple of things on sponsorship, and we will go into that in more detail tomorrow when we get to the 12-step stuff. But having had the experience myself, my only job as a sponsor is to watch that door in a meeting for the newcomer to come in, speak to the newcomer, qualify him, find out whether he's a real alcoholic or not, find out if he's an alcoholic, if he is, lay this simple kit of spiritual tools out of his feet, introduce myself as a man who has recovered, and to let him know that I can help him recover. And my only job as a sponsor is to get him through this work as quickly as he'll do it, and as quickly as I can get, or I can recommend he does it, which is immediately, guide him to a spiritual experience through these 12 steps, and to impress upon him that he must go and do that with others. My other job as a sponsor is to teach him about the fellowship. What's protocol in meetings, what's not. To teach him about the traditions. That's my only job as a sponsor. All of his other problems, once he accesses this power called God, will be taken care of. This power called God. I'm available to talk to them, but ultimately I'll always guide them back to this program. That's my only job as a sponsor. I never, I sponsor a lot of men and a lot of guys. I will, if somebody asks me for sponsorship, I will ask why, and find out if they have a current sponsor, if they're currently working the program. If it's a woman that approaches me for sponsorship, what I will do is try and guide her towards another woman who has had the experience herself, in order for her to get working with a woman sponsor. I have sponsored people long distance. Again, I'll ask why, and I'll try and help them to find a sponsor in their home area that has had the experience themselves. I need to be able to tell my sponsor the truth when he's in front of me. I need to be able to go down there and do step work and drive down there. They're the only times generally I have refused sponsorship. I've not said no point blank, but I ask why. If it's a woman, I will try and get her directed to another woman who's had the experience. If it's someone else in another country, I'll try and get them connected with somebody in their home area. I just think it's very, very important. And I just wanted to kind of tie that up. And I think the only time I have sponsored a woman is once, and I'll just share with you why. There were no other women available at that time who had had the experience themselves. And this woman was a real alcoholic. She went through 9 different detoxes at the time, and she was dying in the rooms a day at a time, just not drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I was able to do is, again, I sought counsel with Peter and with a friend of mine in Texas, and they said, if you have a wife or a girlfriend, you may need to get consent from them first before you sponsor this woman. I didn't have at the time. And he said, you know, what your role is really to get her through this work as quickly as possible so that she then can become the strong woman sponsor for other women. You know? That's just how I've been taught. And I just wanted to kind of tie that up around stuff. I think we're going to go into more around the difference between working with others and the difference between sponsorship in tomorrow's session, but kind of important. I just tied that up. So thanks, Peter.
Sure. Yeah, thanks, Simon. anyway, we get back home. It says here, returning home. So we've done our fifth step with someone. We're returning home. And we find a place where we can be quiet. And there's a time. There is actually time written down here for an hour. They actually say specify an hour. So I specify an hour. 60 minutes. Not more, not less. Carefully reviewing what we have done. So what have we done so far? We've done the first 5 steps. So I suggest that they read chapter 5 up until step 5. How it works. Up to step 5. And it says... carefully reading the first 5, reviewing what we've done, here's a prayer. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Here's a prayer. We thank God. Now, taking the book down from the shelf, that's why you put it up there in the first place. Don't miss anything here. Don't miss anything. We turn to the page that contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we've omitted anything. So I look back at each one of my steps. I'm at the stage now where I've shared my inventory with someone. I've thanked God for knowing him better. I'm now going to look at the 5 steps that I've done so far. And I'm going to ask if I've omitted anything. Have I skimped on anything? Have I really admitted I'm powerless over alcohol? Do I really admit that my life is unmanageable? Have I come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity? Have I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of that God, as I understand that God to be? Have I made a searching? Is my moral inventory searching and fearless? Moral, in this context, by the way, means true, truth. I'm seeking truth. Most inventories tend to be immoral inventories, but there you go. And then 5, have I admitted to God, to myself, and to another human being the exact nature of my wrongs? Have I forgotten anything? I always say to folks, If you haven't told me something, call me after you've reflected. If you think you forget something, call me, tell me before we go on. If we can answer to our satisfaction after the hour, okay. So if I can answer those questions, have I missed anything out? Have I skimped on any of the steps? Am I really sure that I am on step five and I've shared everything with that person? If I can answer yes to those questions, then we look at step six. We have emphasized after an hour. We emphasize that we are willing, that willingness to be indispensable. Now we are ready to let God remove from us all the things we have admitted are objectionable. Can he now take them, every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us to be willing. I'm quite fond of my character defects. I kind of want to hang on to them. What happens if I'm going to be the hole in the donut if I let everything go? I'm just going to be a non-entity. Well, nature abhors a vacuum, and I suspect that when my character defects move out, maybe the grace of God will move in. I mean, and then when we're ready, we say something like this. And it doesn't have to be exactly this, it's something like this. This is, my Creator, I'm now willing you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray you now remove from me every single character, defect of character, which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Now, it took me a long time to notice this. But it doesn't say all my character defects. What it says is, please remove the character defects, every single character defect which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. When I do inventory these days, I sometimes think that God kind of wants me to keep some of my character defects because they might be useful to him. I don't know. I don't know. But that's what I'm asking for. Grant me strength as I go from here to do your bidding. Amen. Now there's an amen. Notice there wasn't an amen on the third step prayer. The third step prayer is the beginning of a process which is a prayer. Step three, step four, step five, step six, step seven is the amen at the end of that prayer. It's a prayer in action. A long time ago when I was at school, they told me about that. They said that people offered up their day, their work, as a prayer in action. But that's how you did it. These Trappist monks and stuff, that's what they do. They offer up their work as a prayer. This is what we're doing here. We're offering this whole thing up. From the time we start step three to the time that we get to step seven, we've offered it up. It's a prayer in action. Yeah, reflection, sharing all our character defects, asking those character defects to be taken away. Yeah. Grant me strength so I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have now completed step seven. We're over halfway through the program, guys.
Hallelujah.
Those two took an hour. Those two took an hour. My experience of that is every time I do this, I get a new freedom. When I start off at step three asking for some kind of spiritual awakening, I don't know when it's going to happen. When a sponsor comes to me, I don't know when it's going to happen. It's going to happen somewhere between step three and step nine. But we got to find it, and we got to find it by doing. I'm done. Do you want to finish us off?
I think, yeah. Thanks, Peter. Just on six and seven. If you're dying of untreated alcoholism and you've been honest and thorough about your fourth and fifth step, my experience was when I finally saw that truth in the fourth column on the resentment list, that the root of my trouble was selfishness, self-seeking,
dishonesty and fear. And every effort, and I mean this entirely, every effort I made to run my life had failed. Personal relationships, sexual relationships, work, my emotional state, my mental state. Every effort to run life based on self had failed utterly. And that this was the stuff that was killing me. The willingness to let this power, remember that I'd already began to experience after step five, to take it. I knew that that power was capable of doing it because of the change that had happened to me after the fifth step. I just let it go. I don't know how to work on my character defects. I don't. I can't work on them. What I need to do is I need to keep doing inventory and offering them up to this power and asking for the willingness to let go of them. I can't work on them myself. I have to do inventory and ask for this power to remove them and take some unselfish action that we'll talk about in amends and in working with others. For me, it was just very, very simple. It was that hour. I knew I was screwed. I knew this was the stuff that was killing me. I'm willing to let it go. Take it. Yeah. But you see, if I say I'm willing to let it go, take it, and then sit there and not take any unselfish action in the ninth step or in the 12th step, I'm going to go back into them. So I can't sit and work on them. These prayers, I offer them up. Boom, boom, two prayers. Two paragraphs in the book. And as we're going to go into in a minute, now we need more action. I have to get out of my head, get out of myself, and take some unselfish action, which is the opposite to selfish and self-seeking action, in order for them to go. I can't think my way out of my character defects. I have to take unselfish action in order for selfishness and self-centeredness to be smashed. And I have to continue watching for dishonesty, fear, selfishness and resentment in the 10th step. And we'll go into that tomorrow morning around 10 and 11. Haven't you?
Well, I reckon it's pretty much smoko, isn't it? Coffee time.
Thanks, guys.